This is CFRA Live on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Good morning, 809. I love this text message that I just got where somebody texted in and was talking about the need for strong, healthy, robust debate. This is Chris in South Dundas. He said, good morning, Christy. Agree or disagree? Should the Emergencies Act have been used? It doesn't matter. And he's not saying it doesn't matter whether it should have been invoked. He's saying it doesn't matter what your stance is, but that it should be debated. He said, whether you like Trudeau or you hate him, it does not matter. This should be on all Canadians' minds. It was used and it needs to be debated. Why have we moved from a society where debate was seen as healthy to a society where my side is right, your side is wrong? Thank you. I love that text message. And kudos to you, Chris. I completely agree. I think it does matter. It was a historic move. And even Trudeau said, as he was signing those final papers, he had that one moment of pause. If I do this, this is a big deal. Should I? And he said, I was serene in my decision. And he said, I was secure in it. And he continued to defend it yesterday. But it is really important to talk about these things. That's why we have public inquiries. We had one locally into the LRT. Remember that? And we painstakingly covered it. Breathlessly, because these things do matter and accountability matters and actually transparency matters into what was actually going on when decisions like this are made. So the Prime Minister's version of events goes like this in the testimony he gave yesterday. He said, essentially, the convoy got out of hand. There was no plan. The Ottawa Police Service said they had a plan, but it wasn't a real plan. Things were getting worse. Everyone was looking for someone to do something. And I was that someone. And it had to be done.
My secondary motivation was making sure Canadians continue to have confidence in their institutions and in our society's ability to function and enforce the rule of law when it's not being respected. Politics was not a motivation at all in the invocation of the Emergencies Act.
That is his perspective. He said he was worried something violent might happen. And he said, how would I justify it if somebody got hurt or run over by a truck? Did the Emergencies Act actually meet the threshold, as in the legal standard, to be invoked? And this is the thing a lot of people are coming back to. Frustration, confusion over what CSIS said. CSIS said for them, it did not meet their standards to execute warrants on domestic espionage related to the convoy. So it didn't meet the threshold for them. But then people said, well, why is it different for the government? If it didn't work for CSIS, if those standards were not where CSIS needed them to be, then why was it okay for the government? Here is criminologist Michael Kempa on that angle.
Mr. Trudeau finally said, look, the words are the same. The thresholds are the same, which surprised many because many had thought perhaps it's the thresholds that are different. He said what's different is the inputs. The government gets more information than CSIS. In fact, CSIS is only one of our sources of information. So it should be no surprise that with different information pools, the government could come to a different conclusion from CSIS. And he said, in fact, this is appropriate because we are the elected government. It should be us that makes the final decision, not the security agency of CSIS.
What do you think of his testimony? Text into the show, let me know. Michael from Rockland, or Mike, I should say, is saying, you know, he said here, this is obviously a joke, I think. Justin should have set up a booth and let the Freedom Convoy line up and kick him in the butt. They would have left that first Sunday. Okay, Mike, appreciate the text. What do you think of the testimony? Do you think it justified the use of the Emergencies Act? And what was your general impression? I'd love to hear. Trudeau, again, final clip here before we get to our panel. He said one of the reasons he invoked it was because, this is where he's very highly critical of the local police service, because he says he believed the police didn't have a real plan.
We kept hearing there was a plan. And even, I mean, we heard in testimony here that there was a plan on the 13th that the Ottawa Police Service has pulled together. I would recommend people take a look at that actual plan, which wasn't a plan at all.
on our panel.
Now, Political Heat on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Calling into the show this morning, I have Lindsay Maskell, political consultant, who is a former advisor to Premier McGuinty, and Gary Keller, vice president of Strategy Corp. Good morning, Gary and Lindsay.
Good morning.
Gary, let's go with you first of all. We have so much to parse up. What was your general takeaway, your general impression of how the Prime Minister did yesterday?
Well, I actually think he provided a fairly strong defense of his invocation of the Emergencies Act. You know, you have to take a step back and take a look at these public inquiries. You know, I think a lot of people think that some lawyer is going to get up on the stand a la Tom Cruise in A Few Good Men and get the "you can't handle the truth" moment. and that's just not the reality of a public inquiry. You know, we've seen, you know, Jean Chrétien appear before a public inquiry and nobody, you know, lay a finger on him. We've even seen Justin Trudeau appear before a committee that was looking into the WE scandal, and everyone thought, oh, this, you know, it's going to be a big show. And, you know, he, you know, did what he needed to do. So, you know, and I think this has been the crux of the what the Emergencies Act is looking at, whether or not the Emergencies Act was required as based in the definition on the invocation of the Emergencies Act. And then I think you have to step back and say, well, look, there, while there is a legal and a process related question here, there's also a political question, because anytime you take a decision to do something like this, there's a political fallout. So, you know, I think Justice Rollo is to look into the specifics around whether or not the government had the proper authority to use the Emergencies Act and declare it, and did they make the right decision. But then outside of that, I think there's a great debate about the political decision mm-hmm. to do that, and whether or mm-hmm. not the Prime Minister will pay a political price for doing it. And I'm not mm-hmm. sure he's going to, because I think a lot of Canadians, perhaps a majority of Canadians, did not support the convoy and its aims, and would have been fine in it ending. So I think those are the two sides of the debate going forward that we need to see roll out in the coming weeks and months.
How about you, Lindsay?
Well, I keep reminding people, like when we talk about this inquiry, a reminder that to actually use the Emergencies Act, the government has to know that, like, this is part of the act. To use the act, you essentially know that you're going through a full judicial inquiry, public inquiry, and will have to go through every step of the process, every document you have, text messages. So the government knew full well using this that they were going to be going through this process. So any of the dirt would be exposed. So of course it wasn't going to be as explosive as anybody would think, because it really was just going to shed some light on some faults of some of the workings of these issues. Really a lot of, you know, I've been very obsessed with the jurisdictional misunderstandings about police involvement and real concerns about the police not enforcing and using the tools they have to protect Ontarians, in this case in Ottawa. I think that this was also an important exercise because, of course, you know, we really saw how people could, commandeer a whole, whether it's the border, the bridge, not just the Ottawa issue, of needing to make sure that people know that we have the tools to prevent something like this happening. But, you know, as we have started to float out into the world of some last, you know, some Christmas parties and holiday events, it isn't really what people are talking about, because the fearfulness of an average person not highly impacted by the use of the Emergencies Act, it doesn't have the same concern to them in the way of, you know, when I'm with my partner's family in Montreal and they talk about the FLQ crisis and what it was like being in that, you know, in that state of unrest at that time. That's not what the average Canadian felt. They wanted it over and feel that the government used the tools at their disposal to end it. And I would say the only thing that really, concerned me or should concern anybody mm-hmm. out of the testimony is a little bit about, you know, what, using the cabinet effectively, right? So it is the only exposure in my opinion, for the Trudeau government really is, as you see, a fairly centralized decision-making here and not as much, you know, cabinet being, you know, not always quite clear on how and when decisions were being made. So there's a little ambiguity in some process there of where things may be a bit too centralized, particularly between when we look at Minister Lametti's testimony. But, you know, again, they knew they were going to be on the stand if they used the act and should be pretty comfortable with the decisions they made.
What about, Gary, the harsh criticism of the Ottawa police? They didn't have a real plan. I saw the plan. The ultimate plan on the 17th was actually a real plan, but the one on the 13th, he was essentially suggesting, was half-baked, that it wasn't good enough. What did you think of that?
Well, I think that...
Is that fair based on what we saw?
I think what we saw was two things during the protest. One, an Ottawa police service in the rank and file that was suffering from a lack of direction from the top. And I think, you know, despite Peter Slowly's attorney's best efforts yesterday, and it was quite something if you watched the testimony to paint her client in the best possible light, I think there's going to continue to be a lot of blame placed on Peter Slowly for failure to act and come up with a substantive plan. At the same time, you know, I think, you know, to Lindsay's point, there was some interesting testimony this week. David Vigneault, the CSIS director, had some very interesting testimony, and David Lametti, the justice minister, had some very interesting testimony. But I think it was also Brenda Luckey who had some interesting testimony. I can't remember if it was this week or last week. You know, she really came across as being extremely clueless in all of this. And when she was on the stand testifying and was asked about the final fateful cabinet meeting to make the decision and she had said she had some misgivings, she failed to speak up. Even when the prime minister said, "Does anybody else have anything to say here before we go down this path?" She bit her tongue. And I think there's also a lot to be said about the failure of Brenda Luckey to speak up and say, "Well, prime minister, I actually think there's some other options that we might have here on the table." And she didn't think that that was unusual. It is stunning to see both the lack of direction from Peter Slowly when he was chief of police in this issue and the sashaying back and forth about what decisions to make, and the decisions made by Brenda Luckey, or the lack of decisions made by Brenda Luckey. And I think that will be interesting to see what Justice Rollo says in his final report.
Lindsay, do you think Brenda Luckey messed up?
Well, it's interesting to say after the fact, I should have said something, or I would have said something different.
Right. Shoulda, woulda, coulda, as they say.
Yes. Especially with the fact that there is, you know, they have waived cabinet confidentiality in this case. But there is really, an element where, you know, that in a cabinet meeting or a caucus meeting, you can say what you need to say. And, you know, you might not agree and, you know, you might not win your point and have to come out and be on the same team. But then you at least said your piece, right? That's what caucus meetings and cabinet meetings are for, to really play out all of these sides. So if anyone is sitting in, you know, an emergency response meeting or a cabinet meeting or a caucus meeting and isn't saying what's really on their mind and then afterwards says, "Oh, well, you know, I was thinking this." Well, you didn't do your job then, right? So I did have concerns with that. And I really do think that an important thing about this inquiry, because I really want to talk about that, the question you just asked, Gary, about the role of the police.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just the failure to have the command of your police force to just enforce the law. Like, we didn't have this issue in Toronto of, you know, "You're welcome to come and protest. You can't sleep here. You're going to move." Getting injunctions, really basic things, that it did not interrupt anyone's life. And that was just the simple ability to have a police force that was going to enforce the basics of the law. So it really was, you know, not a good moment through any of this for the Ottawa police. And I think it's an important exercise in knowing the jurisdictional issues that need to be sorted out should anything like this ever happen again, because we've now shown there's a playbook now about how you can really mess things up in a community. So it's an important exercise, but I really do think it more than anyone, it is the Ottawa police that have taken the big hit out of this inquiry.
Listen, Christy, Lindsay, we know you live in Toronto. You don't have to rub it in, but I just kidding. Joking aside, Gary, I think that is an important point that here we are in the nation's capital. Why did this happen here? It didn't happen in other places. It didn't happen in Toronto, Gary.
Well, that's a very good point. And in Coutts and in Windsor, those protests were cleared up before the Emergencies Act had been invoked. So that is a very good point. I just wanted to comment on one thing about this.
Go ahead.
About open and transparent on everything. There is one piece of information that is not open and transparent, it's not been disclosed, and is what the government is hanging its hat on to declare the public order emergency. And that was why both David Vigneault and Lametti's testimony was so important this week, where he said, well, we have this top secret, super secret legal opinion that you can't see that gives us the justification for declaring the public emergency order that builds on more than just what, you know, CSIS gave us. So that's what we made our decision. But sorry, it's super secret, top secret. We can't share it with you. Now, look, I understand that from an operational standpoint, but that I thought was very, very useful testimony, and that isn't exactly fully open and transparent. And I think Justice Rollo will come back to that in his decision and say, well, you know, maybe I haven't even been able to see this, and because I haven't been able to see this, I don't think the government met the test to invoke the Emergencies Act.
What about, and you can hear the hesitation in my voice, but I've got to raise it, the fact that one of the people involved in the Freedom Convoy is calling for Freedom Convoy 2.0, the Unity Tour. Everybody gets back together in downtown Ottawa this next February, and we do it again. And he's posting on Facebook. Do you think that is actually on, Lindsay? Do you think that's actually going to happen, despite the fact that he has been ordered by the law not to set foot in Ottawa?
Yeah, the inquiry was about choices of government and all of the people involved in the convoy that are facing legal processes will have their time and moment in court. The thing that is hard to wrap our minds around is that for a lot of people that were there, this was sort of like their Woodstock or a real celebration for them. Sadly, remembering the hot tub and the music, like some of these people were having a great time at the expense of residents of Ottawa and just the threat to some national security, particularly when this was happening at the borders. So I am concerned with the fact of the number of people that have had, seem to really enjoy their time in doing this. The other thing being that, you know, there's people who, unfortunately, you know, really through the pandemic have felt like they just didn't have the same autonomy and choices they've had. And this gets more heated up as the economy, people are struggling with day-to-day expenses of the economy and inflation and feeling like they just don't have the same control in their lives. And I understand that can cause a lot of anger, but it can't be done in the way that it happened last winter. So, you know, I suggest they go to a campsite or some other location and have their reunion if they think this was the great time of their lives at the expense of so many others. So I wouldn't be surprised because, you know, again, unfortunately, this fueled a lot of people, right? And I mean, Toronto just had the benefit of what happened in that first weekend happened in Toronto. And so then, sorry, what happened in Ottawa. So they had a bit of a learning. But you know, it really did, unfortunately, there's a lot of people who really felt they had a great time and got the attention and had their voices heard that they needed. And the one lesson for government about that is, you know, those people do need to be heard and there is that frustration, but it can't result in this, right? So I do unfortunately think that there may be some action, but I'm hoping they will be safely directed somewhere else.
Gary?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a good point. I think there were a number of people who came to Ottawa who were frustrated, who don't understand the political system, don't understand how government actually works, and were just frustrated about mandates and everything like that and came to protest. And then there was obviously another group of people who saw this as a means to an end. including James Bowder, who in his testimony has shown that some village has lost its idiot and he should go back to the rock in which he crawled out from. But you know, that doesn't diminish the fact that there are a number of people who felt the convoy was a legitimate way to express their concerns about what was happening in Canada, whether it was cost of living or inflation or mandates or whatever the case may be. And it also is true that the Prime Minister played a leading role in the lead up after during the election in 2021 and afterwards in demonizing these people. And he bears some share of the blame at ramping up the rhetoric on this side. That being said, it does not excuse the actions of a number of those folks, especially anyone who engaged in violence or encouraged a long-term occupation. And I think at the end of the day, through the Emergencies Act, I think two things can be true. I think you can be opposed to enacting the Emergencies Act because it don't felt it met the test and because of the gravity of doing that. And you can be opposed to the actions of the convoy and the actions that they took in January and February 2022. And I don't think those two things are mutually exclusive. And I certainly would hope that if there is any sort of protest in Ottawa, it's quick, it's fast, people come, people go, and that the police enforce the law when they're here.
Lindsay, do you have a spare room in that condo in Toronto?
I'm just asking for personal reasons. I absolutely do. You're welcome anytime.
But I may be coming down in February. Gary Keller.
A whole different show, though, about my complaints about Toronto. So that was
you can educate me.
Congratulating ourselves.
Well, maybe you can make me feel better about the state of Ottawa and our city. Although we did just get a brand new city council, so we'll see how it goes. Gary Keller, Vice President, Strategy Corp. Lindsay Maskell, Political Consultant. Thank you both so much for popping on bright and early. Appreciate it.
Great to be with
Thanks.
You.
Your news is coming up right now.
You are listening to CFRA Live on News Talk 580 CFRA.
It is cold and flu season. COVID-19 is still here. I still have a bit of a cough. I had COVID-19, what is it, 4 weeks ago now? Hit me pretty hard the first couple of days. Then I was better. I was on the mend, testing negative, got back to work, back to my workout regime. Think I went a little bit too hard, though, Stephen Ellsworth.
Shocker.
Because, of course, I know. I only have one mode and it's on.
There is
no off switch. So when I get sick, it's hard for me to settle down. It did really put me out. I had a fever of about 102, 101, and it was quite nasty, but I thought I was better. And then I went gung-ho and I went just full tilt. And then I have a bit of a lingering post-viral cough. I'm not sick anymore, but just that from time to time. That can hang around. Some people get that after they have cold, flu, bronchitis, a virus. I've heard a few questions from friends this cold and flu and COVID season talking about vaccinations. Questions like, should I get the flu shot first and then space it out a bit, then go in a few weeks later, then get another COVID booster? Can I get them at the same time? Ottawa pharmacist Dr. Shelley Detani joins me on the show. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. You're also the Vice President of Pharmacy Affairs with the Neighborhood Pharmacy Association. Tell me, can people get the COVID booster and the flu shot together?
Absolutely. And I would highly recommend that they get them together. We know and NACI, our national advisory body, has told us that it's safe. That your body can handle them, that you get protected faster because we're going into holiday season. So getting those vaccines will protect you as you start to gather with your loved ones in a few weeks.
The last time I got a flu shot, really not much, just a little pinch in the arm. My arm was a little bit sore, but I was even able to go and exercise later, no problem. The COVID booster, I felt a bit gross after. I kind of felt like I was almost hungover, a little dizzy, a little tired, a little bit queasy almost. Do you notice that there's more of an impact? Is there more of a, you know, vaccine hangover if you get them both together?
You know, everybody reacts differently. And, you know, I didn't react at all with my second or third COVID booster. Some people do. Some people react to the flu shot. So, you know, it's certainly possible after any vaccine that you can get what we call an immunogenic reaction, which just means that it's working. That's what I try to tell people. And doing exactly what you did, taking some Advil and going on with your day is the best thing to do. And the main thing is you're protected. So getting it is the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. How well is the flu vaccine working this season?
You know, as with every year, we try to predict, you know, the strains that are going to be most present. So it's never going to be 100%. But what we do know is this flu season is going to be pretty bad. And people, you know, we already know that. We know that from Australia, where the flu season was worse than it has been in a number of years. So protecting yourself, especially in an environment where we know that hospital rooms are crowded and you know, kids are getting lots of respiratory viruses, is the best thing to do. It's never 100%, but it's a good idea. If there was any year that I would tell people to get the flu shot, it would be this year.
Here's another thing I've heard. Yeah, well, the COVID booster's there, but I'm not in a rush to get it because it's not like it really protects very well against the current circulating variants. I'll put that to you.
Yeah, it's a great question and one that I get asked a lot. I think the new bivalent vaccines are something that people should really be thinking about getting. They were sort of developed to protect our bodies, give them broader protection against COVID. So, you know, protecting with Omicron and its of its subvariants. And I think we always look to chase the new variant that we read out there that's in the news, but that's impossible to do. And we know that. There's really no evidence to suggest that there's any difference between the vaccines that are out now, but the bivalents are better, and I would certainly recommend that people get them.
I remember when the previous boosters became available, or the previous vaccines, the crush of people, Dr. Dattani, that were calling the pharmacy and driving different places and flooding the lines, and the pharmacists were just so overwhelmed because in addition to doing what they actually do, it's serving the different people coming in and administering the vaccines and distributing medications, they were picking up the phone. They had to hire extra people and put in extra phone lines. What is the demand now for the COVID shots compared to then?
Well, I mean, pharmacists are still really busy helping people, which is great because that's the easiest place for you to get a lot of your healthcare, actually. But I do think that they're, as with each booster, we are seeing less and less people getting their boosters. So I just think that, you know, it's really important to say these bivalent boosters do provide broader protection. We do know that there's a surge of illness going around right now. We read about it every day. And the best thing that you can do is to get vaccinated. So I would encourage people to still stop at their pharmacy. Many are taking walk-ins. And again, you know, you can go once and get two things done. If you haven't had your flu shot done, get your flu shot. And ask your pharmacist if you can get your flu shot and your bivalent booster at the same time. And more than likely, they'll be able to do that either in a walk-in or a quick appointment.
How much stock of both vaccines do you have right now?
Well, I do relief in different pharmacies, and I work at a family health team. But my colleagues are telling me that they have stock. Certainly call ahead and make sure if you are thinking of going in, especially if you're older and if you're looking for the high-dose flu shot. But there is supply coming in.
Chatting right now with Dr. Shelley Dattani, an Ottawa pharmacist. She's also with the Neighborhood Pharmacy Association of Canada. While I have you on the line, I want to bring up children's Tylenol and Advil, because I know we've been told that some stock should be hitting the shelves, that more is coming. Have you seen that? Have you heard that from your colleagues?
Yeah, absolutely. There is stock. In fact, here in our own hometown of Ottawa, there are pharmacies that do have stock. It has been coming in. It will be trickling in over the next few days into next week as well across the country. Definitely, again, just reminding people to be kind to their pharmacy teams. A lot of pharmacies are keeping them behind the counter because this is still not going to replenish all of the stock that we need. We're still ramping up domestic production, but a lot of pharmacies are keeping it behind the counter, and they may have purchase limits and saying, you know, just buy what you need, or you can only buy one at a time. So I would just tell people that it's out there. The pharmacies will also give you potentially a tear-off label because a lot of the product is coming from the U.S. and may not have the French labeling that we have here in Canada, but it's essentially the same product. So just definitely think about whether you really need it, talk to your pharmacist about it, and then go to them, and they'll likely give it to you from behind the counter.
Just 17 minutes ago, this is a neighborhood group that I'm part of. It's called the Buy Nothing Group, where people trade and they give things for free or they pick things up for free. And this poor mother has posted 17 minutes ago looking for free advice. She just needs a hand. She said, "Does anybody have new toddlers Advil? I have a little boy with fevers up to 103. I'm running out, going on 3 days of this. Can't find anything." People are desperate. Would you have any advice for parents out there that are looking for this and they can't find it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is, you know, I'm a parent too, and I understand and I sympathize with parents. I think definitely talking to your local pharmacist. I mean, this lady obviously needs some Advil, but thinking about how to manage fevers, if your child isn't comfortable or in the pain, they probably need some Tylenol or Advil, but if they are okay, you may not need to treat that fever. Sometimes you can use, if your child can chew, if they're a little bit older than this toddler, they can use chewable tablets. Those are still available. Again, the liquid Tylenol and Advil are starting to come into pharmacies. And finally, in some cases, and I would say this is a last resort, and please only do this with a pharmacist. If you have an older child, you can modify the adult tablets. Split them. Sometimes if they can swallow them, you can cut them and put them in applesauce or Nutella or things like that. You can use suppositories, which nobody wants to do, but those are still available.
Yeah.
So there are other solutions. I would just tell this lady and others, please go and talk to your pharmacist. They're here to help you. Just be patient, and they will help you determine, you know, what you need to do to get this.
But it does speak to the level of desperation, doesn't it, when you see people posting for advice and going on their neighborhood groups on social media, asking for a bit of help in this.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And again, you know, we're all feeling this. I think I feel encouraged by the fact that we're going to start seeing more Tylenol coming in, more Advil coming in over the next coming weeks from the foreign supply. And also I sit on the National Drug Shortages Committee, and the domestic supply will start to ramp up over the next coming weeks as well. So I think we're going to be seeing this problem slowly, not as quickly as we'd like, but getting resolved.
Thank you so much for this. Appreciate your time this morning.
Not at all. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Shelley Dattani, an Ottawa-based pharmacist, vice president of pharmacy affairs with the Neighborhood Pharmacy Association of Canada. So she's urging you to get your flu shot, to get your COVID shot. You know, if there's any parents out there or people who have seen children's Advil or Tylenol and you want to share that information, go ahead and text in, or text in on anything. 580-580. We'd love to hear from you, as always, on our morning show. It's Christy Cameron filling in for Andrew Pinson. You're listening to CFRA Live. We'll be right back.
Powered by Barrhaven Ford.
Hey, hey, I'm Sam McDade, your Bell Media Weekender, and I have everything that's on deck for this weekend in our National Capital Region. So if you don't know what you want to do this weekend, I've got you covered, friends. So first up, this is a great event. The Indigenous Makers Holiday Market is happening today. You can join the Indigenous Business Hub for their first ever Indigenous Holiday Market. It features beautiful products and pieces crafted by Indigenous vendors and artists. You can clear off your shopping list while doing this and while supporting local, which we love. It's open from 10 to 4 p.m. on Somerset Street. Again, something we're checking out. Now, also happening today, the Santa's Parade of Lights. It's coming to Orleans, and you can come see the man himself and all the beautiful floats that are also at the Parade of Lights again tonight. It's time to get in the Christmas spirit, and I would say this is the best way to do that. You can line up along St. Joseph from Uville all the way to Prestone this Saturday. Don't forget to bundle up. Plus, they'll have cookies and hot cocoa to help you keep warm as well. Again, it's Santa's Parade of Lights happening today, and it begins at 6 p.m. Now, the Ottawa Rock and Gem Show started on Thursday. It goes all the way through until Sunday, and it's where you can discover unique treasures. You can explore ethically sourced crystals, fossils, gemstones, and more, as well as talk with knowledgeable staff from a curated selection of mineral vendors. You don't have to worry about your shopping list for Christmas or the holidays or whatever you're shopping for, because you can also browse exclusive jewelry at the EY Center with this event all weekend long, and that should surely cross a couple people off your list. Admission is just as low as $2 per person or $5 per family, which we love. It's an affordable event, and it should be a really interesting event as well, again, over at the EY Center. And finally, on Sunday, our Ottawa 67s are leading the OHL, and they return to the TD Place to take on the Sudbury Wolves in a matinee matchup. You can cheer on Luca Pinelli in this game. It's a 3-game homestand that is kicking off on Sunday, and you won't want to miss any of the action. Puck drops at just 2 p.m. On behalf of the Bell Media Weekenders, I'm Sam McDade. I hope you have a great weekend. You get into the holiday spirit, and we'll talk next week, friends.
The Bell Media Weekenders on News Talk 580 CFRA is powered by Barhaven Ford, Ottawa's newest and largest Ford store. You are listening to CFRA Live on News Talk 580 CFRA.
8:53, welcome back. A pleasure to be here with you this morning, filling in for Andrew Pinsent. It's Christy Cameron, typically of Ottawa Now, but filling in on the weekend morning. I remember when I used to do this show back in the day. You were there, Elsie. You were there back in the day.
I remember a time when Maddie Eisenberg was actually the tech producer at one point.
She was.
Yeah.
We had a whole bunch of people rotate through. So it's Andrew Pinsent's show now. I'm just here this weekend. Before that, it was Dahlia. Before that, it was me. Before that, it was Matt Scooby. Yeah.
I think Dan Pelain a little bit, may it be.
A little bit here and there.
Yeah.
Well, I'm back. Just for one day. Rosietta will be filling in tomorrow morning. Looks like a nice day out there today. 7 degrees, so quite warm, pretty mild for late November. I thought last weekend was the best day to put up my Christmas lights last Saturday because I thought the weather has really turned. We've had a dusting of snow every single day. Not a lot, but enough that the wind was whistling and it was starting to really feel cold. Today actually looks like a great day to be outside. I was wrong. 8:55, you can text in anytime, 580-580. Love to hear from you on any of the topics. RSV has been in the news a lot. Doctors expressing concern that seniors will be the next wave now of people that could be hit by this respiratory virus. The thing is, you hear about RSV in children because there's been a crush of children in our pediatric hospitals that have come down with RSV. But it's not actually exclusive to kids. Dr. Santiago Perez says all three viruses make the rounds, as in COVID, RSV, influenza. So it's important that you learn to say no if you need to stay at home.
If you're going to a party or a reunion or a dinner and you have symptoms, you should refrain from going. You should learn to say no. I can't go because I have a cold.
It's one thing if you have one of those nasty coughs that hangs around. You're not sick anymore, but you're just weeks later. Because post-COVID, Elsie, I don't know if you've experienced this, but I was saying earlier, I have a bit of this. I'm not sick. I haven't been sick in weeks. But the little cough kind of hangs around. You've ever had that before?
Yep.
Right. But if you're still sick actively, you've got a fever, you don't feel well, aches and pains, or you just got sick, stay home. Even if it's gastro, whatever it is, just stay home. Don't come out and spread your germs around. We love you, but we don't want it. We don't want it. Not even your loved ones want it. Seniors are more vulnerable, apparently, to RSV. And many people, including Dr. Samir Sinha, are saying that it seems like it's only a matter of time before it moves from children to grandparents. In Kingston, it is Bonnie Ford's 55th wedding anniversary, but she can't make it because her husband, Jim, is sick with RSV.
He's just become very, very weak and needs lots of help and support.
Ford says her 79-year-old husband is staying with their daughter, and the goal is to keep him well enough that he doesn't have to go to the hospital. So we've got flu, we've got COVID. In the hospital right now, we have 20 Ottawa residents with an active COVID infection, 2 people in the ICU with an active infection. If you're wondering about RSV, We had Dr. Isaac Bogosh, who's an infectious disease specialist, on my program earlier this week. He explained the difference between COVID and RSV in terms of transmission.
We know that these viruses can transmit in many different ways. COVID is primarily transmitted through the air, but other viruses, including RSV, can be transmitted via surface. So, you know, while of course we've been focusing on masks over the last couple of years, and I think there's multiple layers of protection that we can take to protect ourselves and reduce the frequency that we get these infections, and hand hygiene is certainly part of that now as well.
And he also doubled down on the fact that RSV is not just something that affects children. He said there are cases that we see in adult hospitals as well.
It's not exclusively an infection of kids. It certainly can impact older populations. It can cause an identical syndrome to that of influenza. There's decades of papers and publications and studies demonstrating how RSV can be just as deadly as influenza in older populations. And, you know, it's something we certainly see in the adult hospitals as well.
8:59. We still have 2 more hours of this show. Still more time together. Coming up, how should we run future school board meetings after the drama on Tuesday night? How can trustees do their jobs? How can we have members of the community come out and do delegations and have their say? With the way that things ended on Tuesday, does there have to be a change? All the trustees received hundreds of emails. One of them said she felt threatened on Tuesday. Should we do something differently? Do we have to think about this and put our heads together because we're in a different environment these days with a lot of anger? You tell me. 580, 580. Your 9 a.m. news is coming up with Ethan Fink.